are back for part two of our episode, LGBTQ Advocacy. I'm Hannah Stanley, the host of On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. As always, I'm going to remind you to take a moment and hit subscribe on that button so that you don't miss a moment of this incredible content. With me is Peter G., a professor of psychology at Adler University, with expertise in developing and measuring heterosexual people's willingness and ability to be allies for the LGBTQ community. Peter, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, this is wonderful. Now, when you imagine an inclusive environment for LGBTQ community and the people, what exactly does that look like?
Well, I think inclusive would mean that you would feel safe and open to talk and share about whatever you want to regarding LGBTQ issues. I think that to be open about this means that whenever you want to, you can talk about this, you can share, and that you would not have to be concerned about what kind of response you would get. You would not have to be concerned about any repercussions or what it would mean. It's just that it is what it is, and you can talk about it in any way you want to. So that kind of openness and not having to worry about it would characterize an inclusive environment for me.
Does that also include the ability to not talk about it?
If necessary, yeah. I think that, it is our own personal choice to say, this is how I want to keep this issue for myself. And I think that I want to be as open about it as I need to be, and I need to be private about it as I need to be. And I think that in an environment, you have that choice. It doesn't mean that you have to be open about it, or you have to share, or that you have to close down. It's just that you have that choice, and whichever way you want to exercise that choice is just fine for you.
All right. Now, I was going to say on paper, but we're not writing this down. So just talking about it, you and I, sounds totally reasonable.
Right.
And where we are politically and socially, it feels like this is maybe more attainable, right?
It does seem like that. I mean, you can't but deny that socially and social media and just important laws that are passing advocating for LGBTQ equal rights sets the stage for it. And none of this could really happen at such a level that we are at right now without those social issues emerging. But to say that that would be all that was needed is probably not where we should just rest. I think that it takes an active approach to make an inclusive environment. We just can't assume that social climate and social acceptance is enough to put things into inclusive environment openness form.
All right, because just because I feel that everybody on Twitter is all like-minded and is because they're very vocal about being supportive of gay marriage rights or mm-hmm. whatever, it doesn't. There's a whole lot of the population that either isn't voicing that or isn't on Twitter or whatever.
Well, we can't deny the fact that there will always be that. But I think for me that it's not so much an issue of supportive versus unsupportive. I think it's an issue of being openness to talk about anything that we feel is curious about and to extend these conversations. I think that people are, we can be, understandably nervous about, if I want to share that my daughter is getting married and it's part of a same-sex marriage, how would people respond to that? Now, it doesn't really have anything to do with, people are in support of gay marriage or not in support of gay marriage, but also people are just kind of supportive about, what was that like and how is it going to be? And in some ways, same-sex marriage and celebrating that is no different than heterosexual marriage. I get that. But without that open, active, open, inclusive environment, people can have some reservations about whether or not it's appropriate to share. Now, 9 times out of 10, it's usually very open and very appropriate, and people want to talk about that. But sometimes it can be very difficult to kind of say, I have to make the first move and let people know that I have a son or daughter that's involved in the same-sex marriage relationship, and would people really be accepting about it? And not just accepting, I'm sure they would be, but were they willing to engage in a conversation about it and really extend, how I feel about the whole issue.
All right. So obviously you're a researcher and you focus on this particular topic, but how do you and how would you suggest people have these conversations but really encourage others to be more supportive or more open to this?
Well, I think an openness is also about asking questions that may be taboo and maybe feel socially inappropriate. And these aren't exactly kind of water cooler conversations that people can just spontaneously bring up. And I think an open, inclusive environment says that those conversations can be brought up at any point in time. And it's how do we try to engage each other in those conversations rather than feeling like we have to have those conversations for fear of making it seem like we're being we're being closed down about it. It's just more of the fact that anything we can do to try to initiate that these questions are appropriate to bring up at any time is probably the way to go for me. I think that it's just not that easy to do that because people would kind of wonder about how people are going to react to that. And, you know, most of the time it's favorable, but, you know, we have to be concerned about when that people have negative reactions about that or just reactions about just what's it curious or what's it like. So
we've done a podcast on diversity and inclusion. And one of the things that we talked about with our expert frequently was the fact that if you come to it from the right place, which is the place of wanting to be more knowledgeable and wanting to be more inclusive, mm-hmm. asking questions that could be interpreted awkwardly mm-hmm. or as uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But if the person you're asking, if they know you're trying to do this to learn more, it makes it a lot less awkward.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to judge if your heart's in the right place. People don't know that unless you actively tell that. And it also, on the receiving end, you know, people do have this healthy curiosity. And in order to be educated, we have to kind of start from awkward places. And that says nothing about your intentions. It's just that I like to think of it as healthy curiosity. And I think that it's as much of an inclusive environment where people want to ask questions, but people have to be able to encourage that so that it's safe to ask awkward questions about LGBTQ and how do people feel about that. So, you know, and I think that no one wants to make a mistake. No one wants to make an error in saying, gosh, I hope I asked it in the wrong way and maybe inadvertently reveal a negative intention about myself. And that's always a concern. And I think that part of the inclusive environment is to say, I'm willing to hear whatever question you have in order to make it feel, because I know that you're in a healthy place of trying to be open and learn something about it.
Right, so that you can, like, this is a free space. This is an mm-hmm. open space. Ask me, and I can help you mm-hmm. fix that vocabulary. Because that way, if the person you're asking is open to being asked, mm-hmm. it really does help that person be more educated and help others.
Right, and nine times out of ten, these healthy questions really open up a whole new world of understanding. Like, I had not known that. I had not thought about that. I had not realized that could be a possibility. And I think that usually people walk away from these conversations more enlightened rather than feeling like, oh my gosh, I had a deficit and I didn't know that. It's more like enlightenment that this is much larger issue than I really thought about. So.
Yeah, this is a large group that needs to have some diversity and inclusion education. Mm-hmm. While we spend a lot of time on different groupings for that, mm-hmm. this is, I'm fascinated. I'm happy we're doing this topic, mm-hmm. really, mm-hmm. So that we can help with that education and help encourage people to ask questions that they have. Speaking of people asking questions, how do the students respond and how has that shifted over the past several years?
Well, I think for me, what I notice about students is that they all maintain that they're open-mindedness and they want to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think though, and that we all want to try to be aware of their biases and what's how they perceive things. What's interesting to me is that once you really put them in active situations or they're asking questions, you know, they come across things that they hadn't really known about and that it kind of it challenges their thinking, but in ways that feel like safe, like I had no idea about that before. So, you know, a new issue coming up is the idea of gender fluidity and transgender mm-hmm. and how that can be that a person can feel like they're not, that their biological body isn't quite right for them and what that sensation or feeling could be like and how do we help people realize that it can happen and that people do have those kind of choices to say that this body isn't really what I want for myself and how does that happen? And how does it happen and to have students say, you know, how could that have? Your biological sex is your biological sex. Either a man or a woman, how can that be? And to get them involved with organizations and people telling their stories that it can be different mm-hmm. and it can feel different and to believe them. And I think that students appreciate the opportunity where their open-mindedness gets stretched and challenged in ways they never thought of before. And I think in the end, they feel stronger because of it, because it's like now they really know what it means to be truly challenged by being open-minded about that there are many possibilities about our gender identity and our sexuality that need to be appreciated and validated. So.
And these are students at Adler. Mm-hmm. So they're learning to help others with their struggles and with therapy and things that they would need. So to have them be as open-minded as possible would really be ideal, because these could be their future patients.
Well, that's what we try to say. And I try to make it out to be like, you know, we should learn how to expand and be open about these kinds of things, because you never know who will be coming into your office as a client. Not so much as a get prepared kind of thing, but to kind of say that there's a lot of joy in it. There's a lot of joy in learning about things that you didn't know about. There's a lot of joy in understanding other people's experiences. And there's a lot of joy in being the person that, even though you're not like me, you're doing everything you can to connect and understand me. And what a breath of fresh air that is, because we can't be like everybody else to understand everybody else. But it's such a breath of fresh air that someone who's not like you is doing everything they can to understand you for who you are and how you want to present yourself. And not just say, like, this is who you are, but to say, like, that, you know, I appreciate everything you have to share with me about this, because it's important to me.
It seems like this could be a topic that would have some opposing views within the classroom. Mm-hmm. How is that managed?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you would think that a student who signs up for a course about LGBTQ issues has some motivation to be there. And that's not always the case. Students take courses because it's an elective that fits their schedule.
That's valid.
And so it's like, well, I
don't
need the
be embarrassed
course.
By that, people. We've all been there. Yeah.
I need the course. I need the credit. I need to graduate. There's the course that's available. Well, lo and behold, the LGBTQ course is open up. Yeah, exactly.
How hard can that be?
Yeah, exactly. How hard could that be? And, you know, and I think that my main goal for that, though, is to keep students in the classroom, that whatever struggles they may have about this issue, it does me no good to say that you're doing it wrong and that means that it pushes them out of the classroom. In order for me to kind of work with this, they need to stay in the classroom. So a lot of times I validate their beliefs. I validate the fact that they may have, like, say, religious concerns about this. I validate the fact that, you know, they feel that marriages should be between a man and a woman. And even within the gay lesbian community, for example, like with bisexuality, making sure that, you know, bisexuality, could that be just a transition? No, it's a real valid way of looking at it. And even people who thought they were open-minded about it may feel some struggles about things they've never encountered before. And I think that's important to feel like, you know, that can happen. And I'm with you to try to help you on to kind of wrap your head around it. And I think it all comes from a place of healthy curiosity rather than this is something I'm against. And I think that when people are against something, I find they're not exactly against everything. There's just maybe like one part of it they're against. And that can happen. You know, what can we do to try to make it more malleable? What can we do to find a way that we don't have to, like, make sure we kick out these issues that you're having and meet them head on? You know, there's other parts of being LGBTQ that should be embraced. And why don't we talk about those things that they're willing to embrace? So,
are you finding that the parts that they're uncomfortable about, they just don't know about? And I don't want to say ignorance, because that's not really exactly what I'm going for, but they're just unaware of some of it.
I think unaware, but I think it's also like knowing from afar and like,
or the rumors.
Right, exactly. It's like, okay, well, I've take transgender surgery, and, you know, is it really that, is being transgender a phase? They're trying to figure out what their gender identity is, you know. Right. And the issue, and it's, so that's what they know or kind of know from afar. And I think that trying to get them to hear the stories about how people really didn't think of it as a phase, it is who they are, and trying to embrace that to try to help feel like, okay, I'm in a safe environment where I can try to amend my thoughts about this. So, you know, people's views come from someplace. And I think that we have to appreciate the fact that it's sometimes hard to let those views go. Religious issues are very hard. You grew up in a religious, practicing religion, and it's very important, and your faith in God is very important to you. And so the idea that being being gay is a sin, if you grew up with that, it's hard to let that go. And you know, what can we do to study the Bible? Where does it say that? How do people are affected by reconciling being gay and being religious? How do we reconcile being Jewish and gay? How do we reconcile being Catholic and gay? And you know, what have people said that tried to bridge those two things together, and to try to help people get their head wrapped around that both sides can coexist peacefully? And so I think that trying to encourage them that there is a way around this. There is a way to kind of make this happen for yourself. And I think that that's the important thing, I think, for me. I try to instill in my students with the class. So.
And the students who will then help instill that in people that they will be helping to treat, working with therapy, or just helping other people become comfortable with these ideas as well.
Right. Well, that's what it means to be an inclusive environment. Someone needs to take the lead on this. Someone needs to say that it's possible, it can happen, and it can be done with a sense of joy rather than I have to do this. And I think when students are open about their own struggles with this, like I struggle with this too, that makes it a whole lot easier, because it doesn't say that a person who wants to try to create an open environment is above you and is like knows better than you. You want people to feel like being inclusive means that anybody can do it, and that anybody can do it from any place they want to. No one is like a specialist in this.
You're not the intellectual shaman.
No, you're not. You're not. And that places distance.
Yes.
You know, you want people to feel like they're like you in terms of like, you know, just because I'm trying to make an inclusive environment doesn't mean I know everything about this or I'm free of all prejudices and bias about this. I think that we want to create situations where people can welcome that they can and should.
Welcome what they don't know.
Exactly. Right.
As well as, because then you can constantly be evolving.
Exactly. Right. Right.
This is fascinating. All right. This is, I have to think that there's questions that people are embarrassed to ask in mm-hmm. class, because they either don't want other people to be uncomfortable or they are embarrassed that they don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. Let's go over some of those so we can knock those out of the water and mm-hmm. have people feel better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think being a gay or lesbian, you know, how did you know it? Were you sure that you were gay? Was it a phase? Did you have to kiss somebody in order to realize that you had those erotic feelings and that's how you knew that you were gay? And, you know, those kinds of questions, I think, you know, it gets into people's private lives about that, you know. And, you know, transgender, how did you know that if it wasn't really just being a tomboy, were you just, you know, how did you know it was truly this, that you were a girl and you wanted to be a boy? How did you know that it wasn't just being a tomboy and that it was really a change in your biological sex? How do people deal with the AIDS epidemic and trying to avoid that? You know, parents, when they, it's like, my son's gay, do I have to worry about him with HIV and AIDS status? Or not just so much that, with parents like worried, like, you know, how do I make sure that my son is safe, my daughter is safe, and that he or she won't have to endure any kind of backlash for who she is? How do I ensure that? And, you know, other difficult questions. Is there a biological basis for being gay? Are people born gay? Can they not help who they are, and that's why we should be involved in equal rights? Those are some awkward questions to ask, and I think that does the Bible really say? Is there a passage in the Bible that really says that being gay is a sin? And I think I try to take the class opportunity to say, let's take a look at that issue. Let's take a look at the Bible, and let's take a look at the passages that people claim that says that being gay is a sin. Let's take a look at the literature about whether or not being a tomboy really is part of the phase of being transgender. Turns out none of that is really quite holding water. But I think the class for me is like, where else would you get the opportunity to ask these difficult, embarrassing questions and have the opportunity to indulge yourself in a fact-finding mission to find this all out? And not just fact-finding, but just experience-finding. That's, you know, talk to people and talk to a gay priest, talk to a lesbian person with AIDS, talk to a gay person who went through conversion therapy, and you know what was that like, and what the effects were, and so that we can experience it firsthand.
I feel like, and you said conversion therapy, and that's a trigger word for me, where I was like, but I've talked about this on the air before and had really angry people talking about it, and it's very interesting because it's so polarizing.
You know, people either,
but given the fact that that was one that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, and you as well, it looks like, when you do bring things like that up in class, over the course of the class, it feels like this has got to be very emotional and very, maybe even draining for the students to kind of process all of this. How does the curriculum end?
It ends with students. I try to make sure I do a follow-up reaction paper to them to say, like, to make sure I give them time to process. What were you like when you started the class, and what were you like at the end of the class? And to me, the issue is growth. Like, how much did you feel you expanded? How much did you feel you learned? But also that the confidence that I can do this on my own. Once I leave the class, I'm confident that I know how to ask questions. I'm confident I have the experience of asking awkward questions. I'm confident in the fact that I know that it's important for me to look up a website and try to understand information. I'm confident for me that I can now go into a gay religious service and not feel like so much I'm a stranger there. I can actually go in there and participate and be a part of it. And I think that the growth is the confidence that I can grow and do more with this as I see fit is the kind of bottom line lesson I hope that the students get out of this. They don't have to feel like the LGBTQ issue is another thing that's not part of me, or that I'm not qualified, or I don't have the credentials to say something about that. At the end of the course, I hope that the students feel confident that if they want to continue, that they can do it from a position of strength and confidence, rather than feel like I have to, or I don't know anything, or I there's something about me that makes me unqualified to do this.
So they've navigated these waters before.
Right, exactly.
They can go a little bit further out next journey.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is, for me, when I first started the course, I didn't have the confidence to teach everything in the course that I do now. I mean, there were some things I didn't feel ready to teach, transgender being one of them. I didn't feel like I knew enough or felt comfortable with asking all the questions I wanted to. Religion was something I didn't really feel comfortable. I knew that was very polarizing. So how do I train myself and get myself into a position where I feel like I could teach that comfortably and confidently? That wasn't easy. So I think, you know, telling students that I had my own journey about which topics I wanted to talk about and which ones I didn't feel ready yet, try to humanize that process. So.
It definitely makes it less polarizing, which is the word we used earlier, but definitely where they can identify with that as well. Now, as individuals, it seems, you know, you're talking to a classroom of students. They're all going to have their own individual opinion. But if an organization wanted to be more inclusive and help to educate their people, how would you recommend they approach that?
In the past, I've been invited to talk to like a diversity luncheons, and I think I give us a conversation similar to what I'm having now, where, you know, what does it really mean to be open and inclusive? What does it mean to encourage these questions? What does it mean to have good intentions but not know what to do with them? And I think for me, and that was all well and good, I would say this, I wish I did some follow-up. Like, someone has to take an active lead to say, okay, what do we do with the resources and the motivation that we have now to come up with a plan to say, okay, what can we do to make this more inclusive? What can we do to build the knowledge? What can we do to build the experience? What can we do to build the education so that people feel more this is inclusiveness is coming from a position of strength and desire rather than I have to do this, or I better do it for fear of being accused of not being inclusive. Mm-hmm. And so how do we switch that mind frame where there's more joy in it rather than stress about it? And I think for me, I would, if I had my way about it, I would pattern it to similar to the class I teach, where, you know, each week is a topic that we want to talk about, that we want to set aside. You want to talk about transgender and work rights? Do we want to talk about transgender in the bathroom? Do we want to talk about bisexuality and how do bisexuals How do they maintain monogamous relationships while still appreciating their bisexuality? How do we talk about youth who feel like they're LGB at such a young age? And how do we talk about dating in LGBT land? I think that, you know, each week trying to set aside a topic that, you know, that's curious, so that people get comfortable with the fact that I really want to be aware of everything that I can.
Peter, this has been really, really interesting, and I thank you so much for your time and for the knowledge you've brought to us, and just thank you again. Be sure, listeners, to stay with us for part three, which we're going to talk about raising gender-fluid kids. And again, I do ask you to hit subscribe so you don't miss a moment. Hannah Stanley, this is on Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University.